listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Pharmacy benefit managers, better known as PBMs, are responsible for negotiating payment rates for a large share of prescription drugs distributed in the United States. Recently, state Medicaid systems, policymakers, and national pharmacy associations have expressed concern that certain PBMs' business practices may not be consistent with public policy goals to improve the value of pharmaceutical spending. This podcast series is all about PBM reform. Listen to the discussions, share these podcasts, and help build a new pharmacy payer system which supports our independent community pharmacies, encourages fair and transparent competition in the marketplace, and most importantly, is designed to deliver the best patient care.
Welcome to the PBM Reform Podcast here on the Pharmacy Podcast Network. I'm your host, Breck Rice, and I've had the privilege of being around and working with pharmacies for over 20 years now. I'm not a pharmacist myself, but I absolutely love community pharmacy, and I'll do everything in my power to help them be successful. And it's my privilege to be involved in reform in even this small capacity of bringing awareness to our industry. And I love that ability and opportunity to be a part of PBM reform. And excited today to have as my guest Kyle McCormick, the owner of Blueberry Pharmacy in the Pittsburgh area of Pennsylvania. How are you this morning, Kyle?
Doing well. How are you, Brad?
Good, good. Well, if you would please give a little background to our audience here of how long your pharmacy's been open, what you are focusing on, what you are an expert at.
Well, yeah, and thanks for having me on today. And yeah, our pharmacy is has been open for 4 years now. We just celebrated our fourth birthday last week, and it's a little different than most. Thank you. Yeah, it's a little different than most pharmacies in that we don't take insurance. Everything we do is in cost plus pricing. So we take the price that we buy the prescription at, the 30 tablets, 90 tablets at, and add on our professional dispensing fee, which that fee is the same regardless of whether or not we're filling amoxicillin or some specialty generic such as imatinib for cancer or chemo. And so the rationale is for that is, you know, these medications are cheap. They're inexpensive. The most expensive thing we have on hand is under $100. And so there's no need to insure for that or involve insurance in that transaction because it only guarantees that the price will be higher for either the patient, consumer, or the employer or the taxpayer. And it would be like buying, you know, trying to use your car insurance to buy your gasoline or your oil change. Just insurance is intended for high cost unknown events. And just like with your car, you use the car insurance in case you get into an accident. You don't use it for a windshield wiper. And similarly in healthcare, we should be using our insurance for high cost unknown prescriptions, such as, you know, true high cost unknown, not like our fake AWP price things. We should be using insurance for high cost unknown drugs, not things that cost less than $100. Like a windshield wiper, right? And so since the 90% of medications that are filled are generic and the generics are less than $100, almost all of them, just really not an insurable benefit, really shouldn't be something that's run through insurance, involved PBM or anything, any middleman. So we can actually drive down lowest cost by just charging patients directly, fair and transparent prices. So that's the whole concept behind our pharmacy. And yeah, it's been a fun 4-year ride.
And so was that the plan from the very beginning, or did you start with insurances and then end up just eliminating them?
No, from day one, we've been an insurance-free pharmacy. So March 20th, 2020, when we opened, and from day one, no insurance.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Well, congratulations on that that success so far, and it has worked out evidently. And are you a full service pharmacy? You would accept all patients?
Yeah. The beauty of not taking insurance is anybody that wants fair and transparent prices can find them here.
Yeah. So what about for your Medicare population? Are they not used to always, you know, submitting their Medicare cards?
Yeah. And the truthful answer is I have no idea population, you know, who's my Medicare patient, who's not my Medicare patient. I can assume based on age, but otherwise we don't ask for cards. So people often ask, well, who's your primary patient? It's like, well, you know, I honestly don't know, but my assumption is that the only patient that we really don't serve on a regular basis, I do know that we have a couple Medicaid patients, but for the most part, the only patient that I'm, you know, pretty sure that we don't have a ton of would be a Medicaid eligible patient, just because their copays are generally $0, $1, or $3. And since our plus amount is cost plus 10, you know, already their base price is at least $10 or more through our pharmacy. That being said, some patients started out with us when they didn't have insurance. They've since gotten Medicaid, and they've actually decided to stay with us. They know they could get cheaper copays, but they prefer the service of our pharmacy. So I do know that we have some Medicaid patients, but to my assumption, that's basically the only patient that we don't serve on a regular basis. Okay.
So has this decision to be cash pay, you know, only, has it limited some of the other services like vaccinations? Is that something that you would participate in or do participate in?
Yeah, there is a world where we will participate in those, you know. They generally are fully covered or mostly covered through insurance. You know, if we look at things that are fundamentally insurable versus uninsurable, you know, we were talking about cost, high cost, unknown events. Insurance is different than coverage in that, like, you know, somebody probably the federal government should be covering vaccines. In that, you know, if we think about somebody not taking their blood pressure medication, that's a decision that a consumer could take, a patient could take, but it only affects that patient in that decision. Whereas something like vaccines, say flu vaccine, right? The incentive structure is a little different in order to cover that. Now they are low cost, you know, a flu vaccine, you know, the lowest cost one, you probably get less than $20 acquisition. So from a cost perspective, only having to pay $20 once a year is very, you know, low cost in the grand scheme of healthcare. But from, you know, societal cost perspective, if the majority of people don't get vaccinated as they, you know, on their schedule or anything like that, you could have repercussions downstream beyond just that patient deciding not to get that one prescription due to cost or whatever. So it's a little different than, say, a blood pressure. So to some extent, they should be covered, probably much more like a HRSA, how they treated COVID vaccines during the pandemic. You just kind of bill the federal government a reasonable cost plus amount for administering that service. So really, until that day happens, or unless something else happens in the reimbursement front or coverage front for vaccines, we aren't participating in the vaccine administration. Also, to some extent, you know, it does take away from traditional workflow, such that, you know, most pharmacies that are doing a significant number of vaccines are, you know, it's fairly disruptive to workflow. You know, and even peak flu season, whatnot, you see people hiring on additional RNs or things to help administer those vaccines. So in my mind, it's really not, the only reason that we're really doing a lot of those services is because reimbursement on product or reimbursement on dispensing so poor that we had to find alternative revenue streams. In doing so, we took on more work without actually cutting, you know, cutting any. So we're actually doing more with less now. So I really believe that we have to fix the reimbursement problem on the prescription side, our core competency of filling medic prescriptions, in order to actually then appropriately staff and do everything for other services, whether that be vaccines or, you know, point of care testing or anything like that. We can't really we can't keep taking losses or losing money on one side just to get people in the door. Like, a pharmacist's time and effort can't be a loss leader for doing other things. It just doesn't work out.
Yeah, very, very well put. And, you know, on that same line, thought process there, what are some of the major unfair practices that you've seen your peers have to endure with, you know, taking PBM contracts?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely sympathetic. But that being said, you know, at the end of the day, it is a contract that's being signed. So just to say unfair in a sense that, you know, these are vertical monopolies, they should be broken up. But I also truly believe that we really can't wait for government to fix our problems. You know, the only person that cares about our a problem that we have, you know, is the person experiencing the problem. The other person can't ever truly put their, you know, put themselves in my shoes, right? I wear size 16, so very few people can put themselves in my shoes, right? So very similarly, that's a beautiful analogy in that, like, most people will never understand the problems that a community pharmacist is facing unless they become a pharmacist and actually feel those problems, right? So I say that in that, you know, it's unfair, but also we do it to ourselves. We've signed these contracts. We've signed up for decades. You know, we always make up the money somewhere else, right? So I am less and less of the mindset of it's unfair, you know, somebody else has to fix this problem for me. And people just have to own up to the fact that they can fix the problems themselves and they can not sign contracts. They can push back. They can, you know, they can speak up. They can, they can file legislative action. There's ways to fix the problems that don't involve government intervention. You know, go cost plus. There's no need to involve PBMs in these transactions. Go to the employers. We have our first employer contract going live April 1st. It's, you know, super exciting. All the employees will have Blueberry Pharmacy as a benefit now. So you can do these things without PBM reform. And you know, I know it's somewhat antithetical and somewhat, you know, I'll take some flack from my peers, but you know, I'm actually anti PBM reform in that, like, the thing that's leading to the downfall of the PBMs is their amount of greed. And the thing that will expedite their downfall is their increased greediness. So, you know, it's not government reform that's led to the current, really government hasn't done anything yet. And the reason that PBMs are facing so much flack is because they've become so greedy, and finally people are like myself are finally standing up and coming up with alternative business models and cutting out PBMs altogether. And so it's actually the market that's actually driving a lot of this change and not so much government reform or anything like that. So I don't know that really truly answers your question, but you know, to the question of unfair, you know, yes, it's unfair, but you know, the only person that feels it's unfair is the person that can take action and do things. And at the end of the day, come back to the idea that it's a contract that's mutually signed. And I know it's take it or leave it contracts, but at some point you just have to leave it.
Yeah. I remember there was a day that you could actually, you know, carve out networks. So like Express Scripts used to have their managed care network, and then they had a workers' comp, a separate network. And they always tried to, you know, sell it to the pharmacy groups, you know, as a combination, but you could carve that out and say, okay, I want managed care, but I don't need the work comp piece. And a lot of pharmacies were able to carve that out. And then they got wise to that and just canceled the work comp network and funneled it all into their managed care. Totally mm-hmm. two different pricing, you know, fee schedules according to state, fee schedules. But then, you know, Optum and everyone else just joined the party and said, oh, let's just bundle all of our contracts so that pharmacies don't even have the right to unbundle those and say, okay, we'll take, you know, this particular plan, you know, for United Healthcare, the health side, but we don't need your Catamaran, Cypress Care, Timesis, all of those other bundled networks. So yeah, there used to be a day. And so you know, it brings up another question now with not having those contracts, those agreements with the PBMs that you're going to operate under certain pricing rules, zero impact with DIR clawbacks?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
No, because DIR, no GER, no BER, no claims fees. No, we don't. The whole switch being down didn't affect us. We don't transmit anything to insurance. No, it affected the prescribers. Sometimes we couldn't get prescriptions if they sent via. I don't know exactly how, you know, it affected. I know it did cause some e-script not getting to us, but yeah, no switches, no audits, you know, no, I don't need no PSAOs. Yeah, just a lot of the problems in healthcare just don't exist.
Wow. Wow. Well, congratulations on your employer group. Is it's a local employer to your area, or will you have to network with other pharmacies around to cover it?
Close enough that, it's just with our pharmacy.
Oh, that's excellent. You know, that's an area of interest for my day job is providing those services specifically to self-insured employer groups, right? Because they're paying $50 or $60 transaction fee through the PBMs. And, we can set them up exactly like you've done with just a cost plus.
Mm-hmm.
For all of their injured workers. So congratulations on that. Do you plan to expand and go out to more employers in your area?
Yeah, we've done an analysis. I let another pharmacist on my team kind of handle that because it kind of frustrates me in that I don't want to become the bad guy, we're kind of recreating the whole model. But I know it's a little different, more transparent, less middlemen involved. But philosophically, as an employee, I would never want to be dictated where I can get my prescriptions filled, what pharmacists I can see. So, I have empathy for we definitely don't want to create the existing scenario. We want to, but I also know that our pharmacy, and I truly believe our pharmacy is the best in the world. If that's the case, then I don't fear any patient having to, use our pharmacy to get their best price through their employer benefit, just because I know they'll have a great experience. And so far that's been the case. So I really shouldn't fear it too much, but I do always think, we definitely don't want to recreate the existing problems. But we are growing. We've done, we've done analysis for other employers. And so the goal is to have maybe 5 by the end of the year. But it is a pretty straightforward. Once you show them the savings, it kind of makes a ton of sense for a lot of them, such that, the one we just analyzed, it's, $814,000 of savings per year.
Wow.
By using our pharmacy. So you might say that's like a no-brainer.
Yeah, it's real dollars, right? Going right back into their pocket.
Exactly. So yeah, I definitely can see that growing. But the big thing we don't want to happen is we don't want to recreate the existing model. So we want to definitely make a better experience for patients, better experience for employers. The one challenge with, one of my also drawbacks is whenever we go direct to consumer, which up until this April 1st launch, everything's been direct to consumer outside of some direct primary care partnerships. Direct to consumer is beautiful in that you only have to please one patient, one customer. If you start having other people pay for services, you have 2 customers, maybe 3, maybe 4, right? So as we've been working with employers, we've realized we don't just have to make the employee happy, but make the employer happy. You got to make the benefits consultant happy. You got to make the TPA happy. It's just like you're all of a sudden bringing on more work. So we'll see how big we grow it. I ultimately think employers and employees shouldn't want their insurance to be done through their employer. So my panacea is just we get some kind of government as the catastrophic coverage for all of Americans, and then employees just buying, consumers just being an open and transparent marketplace for all of healthcare will, one, make healthcare quality a lot better, and 2, drive down costs significantly. So that's the ultimate ask, is that employers just say, hey, employees, sorry, but it's not a great benefit anyhow. We'll just pay you more and you just go get healthcare cheaper yourself. Because the more we analyze, the more we just realize, $814,000 that could be saved. We could help save that, but also that's $840,000 that could be increased pay to their employees, right? Or, a lot to think about. I throw a lot out there. But that's a lot of what I've been thinking about lately.
Kyle, that seems like some kind of a utopian, right? It's not a current reality. There's too much money to be made on that payer side, right, for it to just happen overnight. I've gone to a couple of those payer conferences, and it's ridiculous the amount of money that is just being thrown around just to wine and dine their customers because they have, you know, so much money to be made in you know, selling a company a health plan, right? Mm-hmm. So what is your current patient engagement at Blueberry Pharmacy? How many patients do you see a day?
We average in terms of brand new patients, we average anywhere from yesterday we had 8 new patients. Average effort anywhere from 8 to maybe 20 new patients a day. Okay. So those are brand new. From a chronic ongoing basis, we're now, you know, doing sync for about 40 to 50 patients a day. When we run our sync, that's about how many people we're reaching out to. From a overall numbers perspective, we've cared for, dispensed something for over 6,000 patients over the last 4 years. On a 3-month basis, we're you know, chronically helping about 2,200 patients. So those are just some numbers.
Yeah, no, appreciate that. And when new patients come in, what's the reaction that this is just a cash only model, or do they know that coming to you now today?
A lot of people do. You know, there's still people that don't quite get it, but a lot of people that they're referred to us specifically because they'll save by not using their insurance. Some people are actually just so fed up with their insurance tactics that they just come to us because they know that they won't have to deal with that. During the Change Healthcare outage, there was a wife that whose husband has been chronically coming to us. And she's like, you know what? Rite Aid says they can't process these prescriptions for like the next week. We got her out the same, you know, within 2 hours, we had her out the door with all of her prescriptions transferred and everything. It's just the patients, the simplicity patients realize, they realize it in the amount of time we're able to spend to them, the amount of, the quickness of answering the phone. People find it crazy. I'll participate in Facebook groups where owners are like, well, which IVR system should we use? And I'm like, honestly, zero IVR. Why aren't you just picking up the phone? like, you know, they just get routed to our refill process is like, okay, date of birth and which drug. Okay, we'll get that out. Like, it's those calls take less than, you know, 10 seconds. Right. I know that patients could, but the user interface for IVRs, you know, entering refill requests is, I guarantee you it takes a patient more than 10 seconds to input all that information. Having, even though we deal with 2,200 patients, which is actually more than patients than I dealt with at a previous pharmacy that dealt with insurance, you know, our phone lines are less crazy than, patients, traditional pharmacy. Just, we also don't have like 2 lines held up on technicians just dealing with insurance issues. Like, that never happens.
Right.
We have yet to call an insurance company.
So, right.
We just don't spend any time on waste. Like, we just don't waste time. So it ends up being lower costs, lower expenses, all that stuff.
Okay. So you mentioned this earlier about how you set up the pricing, but is there a mechanism for remaining, you know, competitive with your pricing a discount card like GoodRx?
Yeah, over time, you know, early on, I was worried about being competitive. Now we have a reputation. You know, we look to your question about patient experience, member experience. I don't want to speak too soon. I want to knock on some wood or something, but we only have 5-star reviews across all platforms. So we have probably close to 200 5-star reviews now. People come to us now because they've heard good things, not just because of our prices. And so it's less about being competitive and more about just pricing that service appropriately. So again, it comes back to the idea that what we are selling is the service, not the product. And it's that service of dispensing. So yeah, that's why the 4 capsules of amoxicillin, I price cost plus 10, just like I price, you know, the imatinib cost plus 10. It's because that service is the same. And so, that's my amoxicillin looks super high cost. If you compare it to GoodRx coupon, probably like 10 cents, but you know, I'm more likely to stay in business than some pharmacy that's, doing 10 cents for 4 capsules of amoxicillin. Right. I often joke that if you look at, GoodRx prices, the success of the pharmacy is inversely correlated to the cost on GoodRx. So like Rite Aid has the lowest price on GoodRx, they're bankrupt. The next lowest was in like the Florida market was, what was it, Albertsons or somebody that just sold off all their,
Southeastern.
Yeah, the second lowest was that grocery store chain that just sold off all their stores to Aldi and closed up all their pharmacies. The next lowest was like Walgreens, who, you know, the market basically says, you know, will be the next Rite Aid. And then the highest price was CVS. So like, I truly believe that like you're inversely correlated with your price on GoodRx. So I don't really want to have the lowest prices because I want to stick around for my patients.
Yeah, that's very good point. Very good point. So last question here for you, Kyle, but what advice would you give other independent pharmacies that are struggling with PBM reimbursements today?
Yeah, I know each person's situation is different, but honestly, like I said earlier, I know that the contracts are take it or leave it, but I don't think we'll see change in the industry until people start leaving. So you just have to start leaving the contracts and start saying no, start taking risks. I mean, you know, I know it's scary, but it's natural in business that, you know, the most successful businesses are the ones that take the biggest risks. And so, you know, if you're averse to risk, then it might not be the best, you know, might not be best to be running a business because that's constantly the risk, right? And then the only reality in life is change. And so, you know, I think pharmacy is going through one of its biggest changes in history. But if you look at it, it's actually going back to people say, oh, what an innovative model you have. And I say, well, it's like every pharmacy used to be before insurance came into the mix. That's what we're doing is pricing a service. So, you know, embrace the change and be a leader in the change and, you know, work your butt off because it's not going to be easy. You know, running a business is not easy. If it's easy, then better watch out for the Jeff Bezoses of the world because they'll say, you know, your margin's my opportunity. And so I think the most advice I have is that, you know, it's now's the time that you have to change or you'll become like the Kodaks of the world.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you, did I hear from somebody that you actually consult and help pharmacies convert to a cash base?
Yeah, so we do have a consulting company, Cost Plus Pharmacy Consulting. And we help pharmacies, either startups fresh, you know, actually we have one pharmacy opening here in the Southwestern Pennsylvania. That's going to be purely Cost Plus and we're helping another pharmacy and, you know, less than an hour from us, kind of do a hybrid model. So it's kind of crazy because we're helping to create our own competitors. It's probably not the smartest thing, but honestly, you know, our goal is to just accelerate America's transition to a fair and transparent pricing model. And the fastest way to do that isn't to open up a whole bunch of blueberries. It's to help pharmacies across the country adopt new pricing models to help their communities that they're already in. So. Yeah, so we do consult through that company, helping pharmacies transition.
Well, that's excellent. And thank you so much, Kyle, for spending some time with me today and telling me more about your model and how you are just taking full responsibility for reform happens at your own pharmacy, not at the government level. So appreciate you being here again, Kyle McCormick, owner of Blueberry Pharmacy up in the Pittsburgh area, here on the PBM Reform podcast series on the Pharmacy Podcast Network. Thanks again, Kyle. It was great speaking with you.
Likewise. Thank you, Breck. Thank you.
Well, that's a wrap, and thank you for tuning in for critical conversations to drive meaningful change here on the Pharmacy Podcast Network, the PBM Reform Podcast. From the front lines of community pharmacy to your ears, please remember, when change is needed, it's everyone's responsibility to speak up. Until next time, be well, be kind. Be involved.
PBM reform is not a textbook process. This component of healthcare insurance will take time to figure out and will consist of many different players of the pharmaceutical supply chain. If you'd like to contribute information, data, or your own insights on PBM reform, please contact the Pharmacy Podcast Network. Send your email to publisher@pharmacypodcast.com or call us at 412-585-4001.